is Miles McFlower for the new show, Why Life Is, right here on Friday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Now on BBS Radio, Why Life Is answers a vast number of questions and explores the demystifying of metaphysics and spirituality. Just a fraction of what we will cover are such subjects as detailed explanations of the afterlife, what the meaning of life is, and what intelligent life is like in other worlds. This is a show many of you have been waiting for to hear and participate in as well. Why Life Is has been on the air broadcasting for nearly 3 years and is now available on BBS Radio in prime time on Friday nights at 7 p.m.
Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We have another great show tonight on metaphysics and spirituality, and this is your show to call in if you would like, and you can do so at any time if you want to talk about anything dealing with metaphysics or spirituality at 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. And if you're over in Canada, give us a call, 888-815-9756. Well, tonight I thought we'd talk about one of my favorite subjects, really, which is God, sometimes called the Creator in other people's vernacular, which is fine. I don't care what you want, what word you would prefer to use, and how that leads into life. And after all, this is why life is, and why not figure out where all that comes from? And that's what we'll be dealing with tonight, how God and life fit together. Hopefully, this will make some sense. It is, again, my opinions. And when I say opinions, it's not just based on, you know, some imaginings, although I imagine I do have some imaginings here and there. But it's really based upon experiences that I've had in isolation tanks and then later on in meditations and out-of-body experiences is what I'm referring to. And as well as, of course, anything that I've read and had contact with, any kind of metaphysical experience that we might claim people could have, I think I may have had. At any rate, these are some of my thoughts. And, of course, please feel free to dial in and let me know what you think. I really am interested. If you disagree with me, that's okay. You'd be surprised how many people do. I don't mind, really. I really don't. And if you do agree but you have something to add or whatever, that's wonderful. Fantastic. So let me begin by giving you some of my thoughts about what God is. Oh, boy, that's a big one, huh? What it is. Now, you notice I'm not using a gender-specific word like he or she, because, as you'll hear later in the show, this is really a vehicle so that God can create and grow us and itself more by having genders and sexuality, et cetera, in some types of life. Not all life has this, of course, but human life does, and that makes it more interesting. I'm sure you will, some of you will agree with that. And to begin with, God is really a manifestation that creates itself out of an infinite set of possibilities. That means that it comes from the infinity of possibilities of what could exist, and from this infinity of possibilities, there is at times an ability for a mind to create itself because it has enough sense, enough direction within the infinite possibilities to limit a part of that field and create something new. That newness is itself. So God is self-created. Now, that's very important to understand. Now, there's much, much more to explain about the physics and the whole theory of what I just said. And that, if you really are interested, you can go to the textbook I wrote called Life's Hidden Meaning. And in there, in Chapter 2, it covers just how this whole process works. But I think today's show, it would take much more than the whole show to go through the entirety of how God creates itself. But nonetheless, if we can sort of start with that assumption, we'll call it an assumption because I think it's at that level for this moment, and realize that God creates itself, yet at the same time, in order for God to become something greater than what it is in its self-creation, it has to do something much, much more special than just limit a field of infinite possibilities, which in itself, by the way, is no small trick. But this is a big deal, that it has to do something different and very special. And let's talk about some of that specialness. Imagine yourself for a minute. Let's all do this if we can. We've just created ourselves into this being, an amazing being, that can create itself out of infinite possibilities, limiting the field of infinity into a very special field that we'll call our universe, the beginnings of our universe. But we're all, each one of us are on this journey, so each one of us is like a God in its own universe. And from that perspective now, the interesting part about this is it kind of gets a little, like, lonely. I mean, after all, we're everything, right? We can be anything, we can create anything, but we still are everything. And that is a little bit of a bummer, at least it is for me. Now, maybe some of you out there might say, well, that's fine. I just want to be everything. I don't want anybody else around to share it with. I don't want to have anything else. I just want to be me, and that's it. Okay, well, if that's okay for you, fine. I don't mind that. But in my universe, I would find that lonely. I would find it uninteresting. I would find it actually in itself extremely limiting. And I would say to myself, well, there needs to be something more than me being everything, because me being everything really just isn't cutting it. I need to be something more than that. But here is the complexity of the problem. If I am going to be something more, and I already am all that is, how do I accomplish that? And here is the way out, so to speak. It's to limit myself through creating something new, and this something new is really special. I love what I'm going to be telling you. It has to have great diversity. It has to have a way of growing itself in freedom from my thinking and from my actions. And it has to be able to eventually, if it so chooses, to add to what I am while it grows what it is. No small thing, right? That sounds like a big deal. Well, it is. And you know what we call that thing? Well, I guess you probably already figured it out since it's in the title of tonight's show. It's life. Life. God decides that what it's going to create in this universe is life. And life is kind of a smorgasbord of various ingredients and ways of recombining all of the elements that God originally is, but in unique ways that actually are limited parts of God. They don't immediately make God greater. What they do is, in some cases, they may even limit the creation of God for a while, because there is such a thing as darkness and evil and all that stuff. And that actually cuts down some elements of God in some ways. But this has to be allowed, because the very first part of God's thought about life, the very first thing that God thinks about is that whenever it, or I, if I'm God, still thinking about my explanation, it wants is freedom. Freedom for everything that I create to think for itself, to act for itself. Now, that doesn't mean it can do anything it wants, because I still exist. I don't want you to think God goes away. I still exist, because that's the idea that God creates the universe and goes away. That's called deism. Some people call it deism. That's not a good universe, really. It turns out to be very mechanical and highly, highly non-spiritual. But the interesting thing is that I'm going to stay around and enjoy the process of life. I don't want to leave. I want to be a participant. And the only way that can happen is if what life is free to think and act, but at the same time runs across me all over the place because I'm still here. And when it runs across me, we call that God's principles and laws and other things. So life can't do anything at once, because if it really starts going in one direction or another, away, way, way away from me or you, if you're still into this fantasy, then the result is that it bumps itself, its head, against my principles, me. I'm still here. It's just that, and I'm not forcing anything to be anything, but I'm not also leaving. You see, I'm not leaving at all. I'm going to stay. And that makes the difference. So we have two things going on. That life is free, all right, but it also is confined to some extent because it has to share the universe with me, God. God's not gone. And by sharing the universe, it has to eventually find and learn about God in various infinite, almost, ways, such a large number of ways. And it does so at its level of response. In other words, it has an ability to do something which is very critical, because God created this critical thing, and that is to take action, to move, to communicate, to interact with other life. And that's a wonderful thing, but in doing so, it has to, unfortunately, bump up against me, God. You can't avoid it, you see. And that's the good thing about it. If you want to interact, and that's what this universe is about, it's about interaction. If you want to interact in some way, then you got to kind of bump up against God. Now, if you bump up against God and you're going against the principles of God, a little thing that you know about it is called forces. You feel a force, and it kind of pushes against you, it restricts you, it makes life more difficult, it may even kill the form of life that life is in. But the good news is that as creatures and eventually people work within the principles of God, hey, a wonderful thing happens. Instead of the forces hitting us and doing all this restriction and maybe killing us, it helps us to grow. It helps us to co-create with others that are doing the same thing and to eventually become a knowledgeable and aware, conscious part of our own Creator. We're still us, but we're also now aware that we're sharing with God its own creations and the bliss and the wonderment that God has as it experiences all of this menagerie of life doing these wonderful things. Isn't that fantastic? I get goosebumps when I talk about this. I'm not exaggerating as I sit here. It may be a little cooler in the room. No, it's actually real goosebumps coming from feeling this wonderment of this great being, enjoying a process that it created. Now, we talked about creation, and I said God's very self-created, but it's going to be important about the rest of the show. Another part of this first part of God's thought is not just freedom, but it's creation. And guess what? All life in some way is self-created besides being free to think and act to a certain level. Isn't that amazing? Yes, I find it is. So life creates itself just like its creator. You see, the wonderment of this is that the life itself is replicating, in part, its own creator. The creator creates itself, life creates itself. Amazing stuff. And not just at the beginning of life, as many of you might have thought of it when I said it, but also every step of life, every moment of life, life creates itself. Think about your own life. Every moment you're making decisions, you're taking actions that create who you are, different from who I am and who everybody else is. That is the wonderment of how life works. It creates itself. Now, some of you who are thinking right now say, well, what about ants and bees and all those that kind of follow, just do the same stuff? And well, interestingly, it is true that the less something thinks and the less something can interact from its programming, from its group soul, and from its genes, the more, unfortunately, it is restricted in its creations. But that isn't because God forces it to do that. That's because it's at its level of response. Remember what I said a few minutes ago? We all are interacting at our level of response. So if you're a bee or an ant, for bees and ants, they're very creative at their level of response. For a human being, it's nowhere near our level of response, and we would say, that ain't much for us. Well, there's so much more to say about this. I'm just getting wound up here. So you go away and think about maybe giving me a call. And if you're on the Internet, by the way, you can reach me at thoughts@whylifeis.com. I still don't have my computer set up, though. Somebody else will maybe give me a message if you type it in right now. In the meantime, we'll be back, we will, in about 2.5 minutes, and I'm going to continue to tell you a lot more about the Creator and life.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
The following statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. BioRepel is a dietary supplement. It is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Colds and flu are a problem that many want answers and alternatives for. Let me tell you about BioRepel, a certified all-organic herbal and nutraceutical formula designed to support relief from symptoms of cold and flu. With so much concern about potential bird flu outbreaks, there may be some help. BioRepel's patents include proven immune enhancement, adding significant preventative and other immune system benefits. In effectiveness trials, most experienced relief from symptoms in 2 to 3 days. Think about how long your last flu symptoms lasted. Incredible and amazing are the words most often used to describe the effects of BioRepel. Using 136 of the highest grade ingredients in a new science gives BioRepel its effectiveness. Relief could be just 1 to 3 days away. To learn more or to purchase BioRepel, call Alternative Health Approaches at 800-777-7850. That's 800-777-7850. Or visit BioRepel, that's BioRepel.org.
And we are back, and this is Niles McFlower for Why Life Is. And if you weren't listening before, well, you missed a great segment. That first segment, I thought I was really banging it out about God. But if you want to hear a lot more about God and life, please stay tuned. Now, if you want to call in, please do, 877-876-5227 in the U.S. and 888-815-9756 in Canada. And if you are hearing me and there is anything not sounding right, also let me know, because this is, you know, this is internet radio. I am at a distant location from the studio, so some people don't know that. And the only way I know how you're hearing me is to hear back from you if there's something not quite right. So let us know about that. We always want to try to please and make you guys hear the best we can sound, I hope. Okay, so let's continue on now with my story about God and life. I like this story. It really is a great story. It's a great story because I think once you get it more than just on an intellectual level, at least for me, this is what has happened in my life. I actually experienced this in my daily wanderings. In all kinds of life, I see this actually happening, the things we're talking about right now. I see how God is actually functioning in each kind of life, be it a plant or an animal, even in pre-life, I call it, like in minerals and rocks. There's some element of God there, but it's a little harder to see, of course, and that kind of thing. But the amazing part about it is you can see how the interactions are there, how life is creating itself, how life is really playing in this amazing array of diversity to give interest and growth to God. And that's what it's about. It's interesting and it's growth. Now, some of us might say, well, what about the parts that aren't going so good in my life? Like, this part sucks and that part's no good. Why does God like that so much? Well, you know, it isn't that God likes that we create suffering for ourselves, really, that's the truth, and produce problems. It's that, unfortunately, when you give freedom, and remember, we're just talking about the first parts of how God thinks. There's a lot more, and I'm going to talk about that now, later, but the point is that if you give freedom and you allow someone to create itself, unfortunately, it also leaves the door open for them creating a lot of misery and making problems. And we even affect the world around us. Everybody says, well, what about those calamities and, you know, all this stuff? Well, you know, the calamities come about because of esoteric or unseen energies being affected by the collection of our activities and thoughts. I know it's hard to take responsibility at that level, and for many people, they don't want to. But the point is that that's the truth. That's what's really happening. It's just happening so far behind the scenes. It's so hidden to us that we just think it's capricious and God doesn't care. It's just a chaotic universe. Well, the universe is far from chaotic. As a matter of fact, since God still exists everywhere, there is no such thing as chaos. Chaos could only exist in a universe in which there is no God. Think about that. And if you want to talk about it, you can call me and we'll talk about it too. But that's a fact. I used to believe, and this is the truth, I'll admit it, okay, and I'm going to date myself now too. I used to think in the early and mid-70s, this is when I graduated from college, I was actually in practice, and at that time I thought that the universe was basically chaotic. There wasn't a God, there wasn't anything like that, and things just happen randomly, and that's the way life is. And when you died, I didn't believe anything happened other than you stopped being. Okay. But I discovered through isolation tank experiments, me going into them, but first finding out what other people were experiencing, that by traveling to other dimensions of time and space, that means my physical body was here, but I, my consciousness, was in another kind of body in another dimension, that there was a lot more of life. And life was not just physically being here, and there was a lot more to the universe, and eventually I discovered that the universe had purpose and meaning, and therefore couldn't be chaotic, and was created by a great being who did a lot of the stuff that I'm going to be talking about tonight. Hopefully this strikes chords in some of you as well. I wanted to, because I want you to have the wonderment and the sheer joy that I experience in all of life, even the parts that I don't care too much about. I'm not a fond lover, by the way, of some creatures. I admit to it. You know, I don't love scorpions and things like some things, and especially certain kind of reptiles that just bite first and ask questions later. They don't ask questions at all. They just bite. And you know, that sort of thing I'm not real fond of. I know why they exist. I can see how they interplay with God. I know what they are doing. But I'm not fond of them. And as a matter of fact, I would never even enter into a conversation with one. No, I'm just kidding. All right, so what is the other part that is the God's creation? I mean, we got the creation and we got the freedom. But God wants life to have something else besides that. It wants life to have the ability to give to join with other life, to become interactively part of other life, to become more one with life itself and with God. And in order to do that, it provides life with part of its own thought, which is love and direction and connections of the creation and freedoms that all life has. So this is a wonderful thing because life actually contains this. Now, not all life is as loving as other parts. It depends on what part we're talking about. But you'd be surprised. Even a blade of grass, a tree, a flower, is amazingly loving. You might say, well, come on. What are you, crazy? Wait, do you go out and hug trees or something? Well, you know, yes, I do occasionally. But the point is that the love that the tree is doing, the love that the plant is doing, is that it's giving oxygen. It's giving food and sugars, and it's giving complex chemicals, and it's giving biology to the soil and shade to the other plants around it, and it's holding water and soil from being displaced, and it's doing amazing things. It's giving at that level. Remember, it gives it its level of response. We all do this. So at its level of response, actually, some of the lowest parts of life are amazingly giving. And without them, other parts of life that we think of as being the big lovers like ourselves couldn't even exist. That's right. There wouldn't be any oxygen to breathe. There wouldn't be any food to eat. There wouldn't be a bunch of anything if it wasn't for the much lower forms of life. So they're giving, and that's their way of loving. Now, granted, they may not be conscious of their giving like a human being. Okay, I'll go along with that. There's part of them that is conscious. I call it the soul part, or group soul part, in the case of lower life forms. But still, the individual life forms may not be conscious. But the wonderful thing is, at our level of response, we are conscious. And we're not only conscious enough to be able to give to other forms of life. Yes, we are able to do that. We give to other people. We can give to plants, we can give to animals, we can even give to pre-life, like the minerals around us and the topography of the earth around us, so that we don't strip mine in some cases and we don't destroy the beauty of that. But we can also give in another way that nothing below us can give. We can give consciously to our Creator, to God itself. That's the part that I really, really like about human beings. We can give to God. Now, in order to do that, we have to learn something that is very crucial and difficult to do. And God created it this way. God wanted the very first kind of life form that could give consciously to it to have to be able to do something that is most unusual and difficult, by the way, very, very difficult. And that is, in order to give to God, we have to stop taking for ourselves. The two are opposite. At no time can we be giving to our Creator while we are trying to take. Interesting point. Most people take a great deal in life, and so they miss out on the ability to give to their Creator. And you might say, well, what are they missing? What's the big deal anyway? What do you get from giving to your Creator if you can only give to your Creator when you're not getting anything? That doesn't sound like it's a good deal, right? Wrong. What you get is this. When you give to God, you become a co-creator with God, and you develop the consciousness and some of the abilities of God itself. That's what you got. Think it's worth it? I do. Yeah. Do I know it's true? Yeah, because I've done some of it. Hey, I haven't done all of it. No, I haven't. And I don't know any human beings that could, by the way. By the way, in case you don't know, I am a human being. Hi. And, yeah, it's very hard to do this. But if we do do it, the payoff is you get to be something greater than a human being on a conscious level, and we're the creators, we're in control of how and when and if we do it. Think about that. I do a lot, actually. So God gives human beings this new part of life, we'll say, from the parts that are lower in the kingdoms than human, this amazing quality, and it is a neat quality. It's like you too can become part of who and what I am. Welcome to the club. Ho, ho, ho. Now that is something. Is that worth giving up receiving and getting something on a personal level? I think it is. But if you haven't tried it, you may not believe it. So maybe it's worth trying. Maybe it's worth really giving it a shot. Because after all, this is, I think, the ticket. The ticket, as they say in some circles, to moving ahead. Now, some people think moving ahead is getting more things for themselves, getting more interactions for themselves, getting more of whatever it is that they desire. Okay? The problem with that is that that cuts us off from sharing in and becoming one with our Creator. And it's a big deal to lose that. Unfortunately, at the present time in this world, the majority, the vast majority of people do not know this because they're unaware of it. I guess it's the reason I'm saying it on the radio tonight, right? It's because most people don't know it, and they ignore, if they do even slightly hear about it, they ignore it because they don't understand how it works. They don't believe that it's true, and they don't understand that it's true. Both of those are important elements, aren't they? Well, belief I'm not too good at. I'm not a preacher, so I can't help those who need belief. They can probably find that in a religious vein, and I don't discourage them from looking. But in terms of understanding, that's the part I think I may be able to be helpful, because I can explain why, that's a big word, this is needed. This is the reason and the very existence for human beings in the long run. We're here to learn this great message that by shifting our focus from getting our desires met to co-creating with our Creator by giving, by loving, I mean unconditionally, without getting something in return, to others so that they eventually can do the same, which means you have wisdom in the way you give. Wisdom is important, not just giving. Then we can start to become something greater, much greater than a human. Something that is wondrous. Something that adds beauty and joy to life at levels that are really, I can't describe, because they're greater than could be understood until one experiences them. But they are real. They are real levels. And I promise you, if you try this, you'll find that it is true. Yes, I promise. But you got to try it. And there's a lot more to trying it, which I'm going to explain some of that and some of how God helps us to discover how we can try it and helps us do it in our next segment. So we've got about a minute here, and in about a minute, I'll just give you a taste of that. That one of the things that is required is self-sacrifice and self-discipline. But not discipline about doing mundane things. Discipline about developing part of God's mind within our mind and creating more of it. You can't replicate it. You can't copy it, because God says you've got to have freedom and creativity. Well, how can you be free and creative if you're copying something, right? That's not possible. You've got to create it for yourself. I'll help you to do a little of that while we come back from our next break, which is going to be in about 2.5 minutes. And now stay tuned and also think about some things to maybe call and talk to me about. And I'll be back in 2.5 minutes.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Let me tell you about most supplements that help support joint health, movement, and ease. They usually contain a few helpful substances that work on some people moderately well. For many others, these levels of help are either not enough or are not helpful at all. But there is a product that contains 36 different high-potency and very effective ingredients that support overall joint health, movement, and ease when moving. It's Freedom of Movement by Alternative Health Approaches, and it works in many different ways. This formula is critically balanced to synergistically and dramatically improve joint movement through supportive health, and usually within several hours. The relief generally lasts for an entire day and over time can be permanent. Freedom of Movement comes with a money-back guarantee. Even shipping is refunded for the first bottle. This unique formulation has helped thousands to maintain joint health. The price is $24.95 for a 90-caplet bottle. It's available from Alternative Health Approaches at 800-777-7850. Give this powerful all-natural supplement a try if you haven't found relief from other sources. That's Freedom of Movement. Call 800-777-7850.
Well, hi again. This is Niles McFlower for Why Life Is. And, if you're just tuning in, this is a show on metaphysics and spirituality, and hopefully you aren't just tuning in because I've been talking about God, the Creator, and life, and hopefully you've heard some of that, I would hope. Also, I just made a little adjustment on my soundboard here. I'm learning this as we go along. Hopefully I'm not quite as muffled as I may have sounded. I raised something slightly. And we'll see how that sounds. I hope it sounds more natural. I'm trying to do that. Also, I'm going to make a little bit of a change right now. We'll see what this does. I don't know what this will do, but hopefully it's going to make me sound a little better. I don't know. I'll give it a shot. If I'm over-modulating or doing something crazy, well, we'll find out. All right. So let me begin again. I'm still adjusting this. By telling you what I think might be helpful to develop yourself, each of us, into more of our Creator, and to do so in ways that really adds the beauty and joy that I was talking about, that gives each person some direct feedback that this stuff can really work. And it's all up to you, because, again, it requires freedom of thought, and it requires that a person be creative, and there's nothing I can tell you to do something specifically that would work. I can make suggestions if I knew you as a close associate to try this minor thing or that minor thing, but it would all still be dependent upon your creations in thought and your creations in actions. And that's just the way it is, you know, and if you don't like that, well, I'm not the guy to complain to. You know who to complain to? It was God who created it, and that's the system. I actually like the system because it makes every bit of sense. Okay, the first area that I think would be interesting to talk about is sacrifice. Sometimes people think of sacrifice as like a very negative thing. You know, like, oh, God, sacrifice. You know, do I have to give up my right arm or something? No. Sacrifice in spiritual terms means to give up those things that stand in the way of doing exactly what I'm trying to talk about, which is to become more a part, a co-creative part with God. That's not a bad thing. That's a great thing. And so every sacrifice that we make in a spiritual sense, it has to be a spiritual sacrifice, will lead in that direction. Now, what about people who sacrifice by maybe flogging themselves and doing things like that? Well, that's not a spiritual sacrifice. Actually, that may not even be a sacrifice at all, but in any case, it's not spiritual. There's lots of things people call sacrifices that are not spiritual. What's the difference? If it's spiritual, it has to do with following in the general path of God's mind, which is light, meaning that it helps and serves other people. If it doesn't help and serve other people, it's not a spiritual sacrifice. And in addition, it needs to not be destructive to our continuing ability to do that. So in other words, let's say that a person could sacrifice their very life, okay, and in the process it may help and serve some other people, but then from that point forward, they wouldn't be able to continue to do that. In most circumstances, now there are some exceptions to this rule, in most circumstances, that would not be considered a spiritual sacrifice. I know that's very controversial and something to think about. And again, there are a few exceptions to that. But generally speaking, that's the case. Okay, so spiritual sacrifices are good things. And the way we know that we're doing those good things is because we can see it in service to others. What else can we do? Well, this is a big subject, and I won't be able to cover all of it this evening, but it's called spiritual discipline. Now, it doesn't mean that you do what other people tell you to do. As a matter of fact, if someone is telling you to do something, like you've got to do this or else, then that they're not helping you to spiritually discipline yourself. And they wouldn't even be probably helping you to do anything. Because, again, you've got to be creative. You have to be free and creative in your thinking and in your interactions in order to achieve the things that I'm talking about. All right? So be careful of people that come up to you and say, well, if you just do exactly what I say, I'll bestow upon you some great name and award or something, and you now will be much closer to being a godly person. Don't buy into that stuff, because that isn't true. That isn't how God is, so why would you want to become that, you know, whatever it is, a stooge for someone else, basically. And when I think of cults, I think of people who are being duped into believing that by doing exactly what they're told and do it now and in this way and follow these rules and that kind of thing, that is not what I think creates us into our Creator. I think it moves us quite away from that. Now, you may disagree with that, and if you want, you can give me a call and we can talk about it. All right, so what is spiritual discipline then, since it isn't somebody else telling you what to do? Well, it's you telling yourself what to do that gets you closer to becoming more aware, and then more conscious. Spiritual discipline works first on our senses. It unifies our senses. It gets them cleared out. It gets them so that there's less retained energy in them, so the information that they contain is more accurate. And then it allows that information to be synthesized into accurate knowledge and eventually be used in consciousness by unifying the senses. That's what spiritual discipline does. And it works first on the body part of us, not the mind part. Many people think it's all about mind. Well, I wish it were, because in some ways that might be easier. We could just think ourselves into spiritual discipline and that would be it. But unfortunately, it isn't. it's a difficult process, particularly if you're physically alive, which I think most people are that are listening to me right now. And if we're physically alive, that's where it's most difficult to change the senses. And most of us have illusion, meaning that we're filled with energy that is stuck inside of us because we think too much of ourselves, and energy follows that thought of ourselves. And it's blocking off our senses in areas called our chakras, and our senses are not working very well, so we get bad information. The information, instead of being accurate and complete, is incomplete and inaccurate. Well, guess what that does? Yeah, it actually leads to more illusion. Instead of us creating more of ourselves into being part of God and to creating more beauty and more love and more truth and making our life joyful, it makes our life miserable. And we lose all of those great qualities that I just mentioned. Okay, so spiritual discipline begins with the physical body. Why? Well, because you're physically alive. And you got to start where you are. And where we are right now is we're physically alive. Now, if I was giving this talk in the astral world, which is where we go after we die from here, everybody I'd be talking to would be in an astral body where their consciousness would be focused in their astral body. And we'd be talking about disciplining that body, which is a bit easier to discipline, by the way, and more responsive. Therefore, it's a little easier to develop ourselves into God in the next dimension of time and space than this one. But we're here, so we got to deal with it as we are, right? Okay. And here, it requires a great amount of this thing called spiritual discipline. What does it entail? It means that at each point in any interaction that we're taking, we must focus in on first one sense, and then another, and then another, and you kind of go around and around, trying to make sure that that sense is focused out towards others. In other words, that the information that that sense is supplying to us is being used in some way to serve others rather than ourselves. That's spiritual discipline. And you only do it with one sense at a time to begin with. I'm not saying that's how you're going to eventually end up. But, hey, you got to crawl before you can walk. And in spiritual discipline, you start at the very beginning of this thing because it is so hard to do that you have to start like one at a time. So you start with how you hear or how you see at a particular time. And whether or not you're hearing or seeing or smelling or tasting or whatever feeling, and also there are two senses about God itself, if you're using those senses for others, for the purpose of serving others in some way, then you're spiritually disciplining yourself. That's how you do it. After a while, and a while could be many months or even years, I don't want you to think you're going to get this done overnight. After a while, the senses grow, and they grow in this godly way where they not only grow in the accuracy of the information, which tremendously improves, but they also grow in the ability to use the senses together at the same time. And that creates a miraculous event. When you can use the senses in at least one body at the same time, you can consciously control to what level your mind and actions are spiritually attuned to God. But you need this oneness, this unity. And there's another name for it. You're going to be surprised when I tell it to you, unless you already know. And it's called yoga. That's right. That's what yoga is. Now, yoga is not about doing exercises. I know everybody thinks, oh, that's a physical yoga. But yoga, the kind of yoga I'm talking about, is a more advanced type than the type that most people talk about. This type of yoga is really dealing with things that include the astral and the monastic or mental part of us at the same time. And these types of yogas really do far more than these old yogas that are used by people today from antiquity that really are more about stretching and limbering up the body. They may improve sense to some smaller men, but not like more advanced yogas can do. Those of you who practice, say, Raja Yoga may understand what I'm saying. But the important part about this is that you're gaining some union in yourself. That union means that you're not just unified in your senses. You're unified in what your senses are experiencing, and that's how it leads into consciousness. See, everything about sense is awareness, but since you're also sensing something outside of yourself, you're becoming more conscious of what those things are like. And when you do so in a way that is accurate and full and complete, then you and they are becoming more one. And by becoming more one with everything around you, you're becoming more like God. That's it. That's the secret. That's how it works. I hope you followed all that. I'll say it over again in another way. But, I mean, it's amazing that that's how we get ourselves to that point. That's why spiritual discipline is so very important. Without it, there's virtually no way to make a significant progress towards becoming one with our Creator. There really isn't. I know you might find that hard to believe. You say, well, but I read in a book or I heard about this place. You go there and you pay them X amount of money and they do this. No, it doesn't cost anything. As a matter of fact, if you have to pay money for it, it's probably not right. Because it's something you create in yourself, and nobody else can really do it for you. Remember that. So before you go and pay someone something or whatever to make you into something special and give you a new name or something, think about it this way. It's all self-created because God is self-created. And in order to become more of that great being, you need to follow its general principles, not follow any specific pattern or specific thought or action, but the general principles, because God still exists everywhere. If you go against the principles of what God is, and God still exists, and I'm saying that God does exist, guess what? You're going to get forces in your life. The forces sometimes are called karma, they're sometimes called energies, or whatever, it doesn't really matter. They're just forces. And forces energy against energy, and it restricts you. It causes us to lose consciousness, to become less, not become more, and to suffer. Those are not things I think I want for anyone else, and I wouldn't want them for myself. And so, therefore, hopefully, this is making some sense. I hope so. I really do. Okay. Now, let me go through this in some other ways. Oh, by the way, we're going to go past the 55-minute mark because there's no show that's scheduled to go on after this one. And I could say we're very fortunate, or maybe we're not. I don't know what's good for the radio station, but it just is the way it is. And for right now, we can stay on for a little bit longer. And so I'm going to do that. I'm planning on doing that, as a matter of fact. So let me give you some other ideas about the concepts in spiritual discipline that might make some sense to you and how life and God and the things I talked about earlier in the show can really be experienced. Another element of spiritual discipline is responsibility. Remember I said that we need to work at our level of response. Well, there's another way to look at response. Response means what we're capable of doing. And responsibility means that what we're capable of doing and choose to do. Okay? So if you take greater responsibility for first yourself, it begins with yourself, but here's the big ticket, for others. Take greater responsibility for others, and you include that in the element of spiritual discipline, you get a big return. Huge return, because God likes not only those that work at their level of response, but also those who choose to grow in that level. And that's, you grow in that level by choosing to take responsibility for others. Yep, that's it. And how do I know that that's true? Well, first of all, I've done it. And I've helped many other people to do it and watched what has been the result. And you can try the same thing. But besides that, besides the fact that I've done it and that I've watched other people do it, it also makes sense because that's what God is doing, isn't it? Think about it. Isn't God doing that by creating life, which is what the show is about? God is saying all of this life out there is an extension of me. It's an extension of me. I helped to create it, but it is self-created. And in the process of its own growth, it is an extension of my response. Therefore, my responsibility is for all life. God takes responsibility for all life. Think about that. And when a human being can take responsibility for life up to its own level, it begins to become something more than human. And when it starts to take responsibility slightly for that which is beyond its level, it becomes then non-human and it moves to become superhuman. Superhuman. That's what I'm telling you. It's the way you do it. And well, I've heard people, you know, people write me or call me, how do I become a master? I want to be a master of this or that. I don't want to reincarnate. I'm telling you right now, this is it. I'm giving it out. Here, oh, it's the secret. This is it. The big secret's right here. This is it. Because if you take responsibility for life up to your level, and then you go even a little bit beyond, you start leaving the life you're in and become something you grow into, something greater. And you do it by becoming a co-creator with God. Because at the human level, we actually start to co-create with God. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, I think it is. It's thrilling in a sense. Fantastic. Okay, then where does that lead us? Okay, if you start taking responsibility, you can't take responsibility in one fell swoop. So I'm going to be responsible for everything, every way possible. Yeah. Well, you'll become overwhelmed and you'll fail because it is so hard to even be responsible for ourselves, and that's the first step. What does that mean to take responsibility for yourself? Well, it means that it isn't anybody else's fault every time you do something wrong. It means that everything you do or say, you complete at the very best that you can. Yes? I'm not kidding about that. The very best that you can. You do the best that you possibly can in any and every situation. Whoa. No small thing. That is tough to be able to do. And that's just taking responsibility for yourself. That could take years for some people to achieve a reasonable level at. But where's the next step? The next step is to start taking responsibility for others by helping them to do the best they can. And usually it starts with physical things. You try to help others to use less time and energy in the physical world for whatever it is that they're doing. And you try to help them to stay as healthy and well, and to make as few mistakes as possible. Because mistakes are really connected to selfishness. So you're helping people to become unselfish. That's the beginning of taking responsibility for others. You also take responsibility for things other than people, like animals, plants, and minerals. Everything around becomes an effort on our part, or I shouldn't even call it effort because eventually it becomes effortless, but becomes a focus to try to use less energy, try to use less forces, to decrease the amount of forces in life around us in every way possible, and to make the world as beautiful as possible. That's just the beginning of taking responsibility for others at the physical, I'll call it etheric or electromagnetic and physical levels. No small thing to do, and many people are struggling with just that, who claim to be quite spiritual, by the way. Just that in itself is a huge step to do. But there's much more. Oh, yeah. That's the reason I've still got maybe 12 minutes here. I'm going to keep talking. Yeah, there's more. And I'm going to tell you about what the more is. The more to become part of God is to take responsibility eventually. Now, you got to get really good at the first parts of what I just said before you go to this next level. To take responsibility for how people feel and whether their feelings are working accurately and whether they are directing that those feelings into love or into emotion. If you take responsibility for trying to get people to love more and to emote towards themselves less, that's a much bigger level of responsibility. That's a huge jump from just getting them to use less energy and to be more cooperative and more communicative. This kind of, it's called astral discipline, this kind of discipline is very difficult to achieve, and it could take lifetimes to get somewhere. It is not easy to do at all, but the results are profound because you start becoming this great soul. I mean, literally. And from the astral side of spiritual discipline, a person actually starts literally exhibiting many soul qualities while they're physically alive. Isn't that amazing? And soul qualities is like sub-God qualities. So now you start becoming a lot more like your Creator. And you experience the beauty and the joy and all the stuff that I've said start coming in. They pour in. The first year or two you do it, maybe not, because it's very tough and you make a lot of mistakes. But eventually you get better at it. And then the consistency, big word in spiritual stuff, the consistency leads you towards this amazing place of actually experiencing the world in a oneness in terms of love. See, experiencing the world in terms of cooperation and sharing, which is what happens in the physical part of discipline, is interesting, but it isn't as wondrous. Love is a wondrous thing. And once you experience love everywhere, in everything, it changes us into souls, here, now. So this astral discipline is a big deal. Now, it's a hard thing to do. And I don't want you to think that you're going to get there just by starting with it. You've got to start at the lower levels if you haven't done it yet. So please don't jump into trying this part until you've become successful with the other part. And don't become spiritually ambitious, because then you're doing it for wrong motive. Remember, you've got to be doing this for the sake of others. You want to serve others. It can't be because, how quick can I get to be a soul? Do I get a big S on my chest or something? You know, no. Souls don't care about that. If you do, you're not being a soul. You're doing the opposite. You're going the wrong way, you see. So hopefully you won't do that. Hopefully you'll hear my words, right? All right. So, if a person reaches a high level of responsibility for others in the way that they love, and how, when I say others, I'm not just talking about people. I'm talking about everything, you know, everything around them. It becomes more giving. When I say loving, I'm talking about giving. Everything becomes more giving and also more wise in the way that it gives. So you may help a tree give in a more wise way. There's lots of ways to do that, believe it or not. Yeah, maybe you're a geneticist and you know how to do that. Fantastic. You should not exclude science from the things I'm talking about. Everything is one. Everything is connected. It's amazing. And you can see that as you work in these different realms. Okay, so if you reach a fairly high level of responsibility in giving wisely, then the process of becoming God becomes almost self-revealing. From that point forward, most people don't need to hear anything from me anymore. I'm serious. I'm still available. If you're there and you're having a problem, give me a call. We'll put our heads together and see what I can do. But the point is that for a lot of people, once they get really good at that part, they almost don't need much more, because it is really, that's where the momentum starts picking up and a person will be carried forward. Now, if we can just get everybody there, hey, this world will be a different place to live completely. I mean, you won't recognize it at all. forget about global warming or any of the other crises we're facing, can't happen anymore because everybody is giving wisely and they're helping everything and everyone else do the same. Well, once you reach that point, guess what? The problems go away. The forces stop being. And then you're at a new stage. Now, the next stage is called monastic or mental discipline. Now, mental discipline is really hard to do. Why? Because at this point, now, instead of just helping everybody give wisely, you're helping people to think in ways that are super truthful, that carry with it a wholeness in wisdom and thought that is so great that each person starts to become, if you're working to do this with someone and they're accepting of it, your responsibility becomes to help people become super creative in their thinking. And their creations are so truthful that most of them work. Now we're talking about not only a world of loving, wise givers, but of genius-level people who are creating new and great ideas in action and in things, technology in this world too, all at the same time. Oh, what a world that would be. Like I said last week, just sign me up. I'm ready to go because this is the place I want to be. Well, but we have to make this world like that. You see, planets. Planets are laboratories for life. In order for life to grow, it needs a planet because planets are the resource for life. Without planets, life doesn't have sufficient resources. It needs planets. Now, there could be some exceptions, but in general, this is a true statement. You need to have a planet for life. And so planets help to grow God. And once a planet reaches a level, physical disciplinary stage of spiritual discipline, with most people or a lot of people are doing that, that planet then starts to develop other planets to help them to do it as well. Yeah, really. And if you reach the astral and eventually the monastic or mental disciplinary spiritual levels, you're developing whole solar systems of life. Many planets are being developed to increase life on them in ways that are better than the planet originally from which the people came from, because they're not people anymore. They're beings usually beyond human. But the point is that you start creating life in other worlds, multiple ones eventually. And you're doing so in ways that help to grow God. You're not just going out and planting a tree and saying, well, I hope it does okay, see you later. No, you're creating new kinds of trees in new kinds of worlds with new principles applied based upon how that world's gravity and other things that are proximity to its sun, all kinds of things apply. Eventually, you may create the planet itself. Well, that's getting pretty far on. You got to be really, really developed in order to do that. But life is like that. There's no end. There's no end, never, because you just keep growing. And that's what the Creator wants. That's what God wants. God wants everything to reach its own level and beyond. It does not seek subjects. It doesn't seek us to worship it as a being that is always exalted and greater than us. It wants us to participate in its growth. Now, there's a little paradox there. Let me add it quickly. And that is that, because I'm running out of time. And that is that the Creator, even though it doesn't seek to be beyond us, we can never really catch up to it because it grows exponentially and all of life forms that it creates help to contribute to it. So it's always going to stay ahead of us. But that's not why. It didn't do it for that purpose. It just is that way. But it doesn't seek us to exalt it. It seeks us to become it, even if we can't. It still seeks that for us. It's a wonderful thing. It's an amazing thing. So I hope that you hear what I'm saying. Now, it may be a bit against some of your religious doctrines, and if it is, that's you know, it's something to consider, and I'm not telling you to give up any religious beliefs for what I'm saying. But it is a rational but also a wonderful way to understand how our universe works. Well, I'm running out of time for right now, and I haven't even told you anything about what I'm doing or whatever. I just run through a couple of things. This Monday, in case you're in the Phoenix area, because that's where I am, come and see me over at Mesa Fiesta Borders at 7 o'clock on this coming next Monday. And guess what I'm talking about? Where did God come from? Now, I know I didn't exactly cover that in today's show, but that's what I'm going to be talking about. And then on the June 4th, I'm going to be talking at Glendale Borders, which is all on the other side of Phoenix, the beginning of human life. Yes, I'll be talking about that. How did human life begin and why? Well, anyway, come and see me if you're going to be in the area. Also, email me and let me know how today's show was for you. Hopefully it was something that was helpful. But if it wasn't, let me know about that, too. I want to know all of it. The good, the bad, the ugly, and especially the beautiful. Okay, so for right now, I'm going to be signing off because I don't want to take any more of this wonderful radio station's time. And you have been listening to BBSRadio.com, by the way. I didn't mention that, but that's what this station is. And if you want to hear more, you can listen to KXAM.com here in Phoenix. I will be on that station tomorrow from 12:06 p.m. until 1 o'clock our time here. And that's the same time as Pacific time, for those of you who don't know that we go on daylight savings time here. And for Why Life Is, this has been Niles McFlower. Until next week.